Hello, 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 and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast, which, of course, is a fantasy football podcast. And I am Scott Pianowski, your co-host today. I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the proprietor of Reception Perception, my friend and colleague, Mr. Matt Harmon. Aloha.
Scott, thanks so much for having me. Like we said before we started recording, it's nice that we actually have something big and juicy to talk about here. And sort of there's all these weird times and weird pockets in the NFL calendar where things get ultra slow. And like we're just basically, I don't know about you, I'm abstaining as much as possible from these stupid, like meaningless back and forth debates about a wide receiver prospect who's going to go in round five and probably will never matter anyways. But that's about like the only thing that normally happens in this time of year. But luckily, the NFL is gracious enough to give us both something to talk about.
Yeah, I love it. And look, I'm going to be honest. I mean, I'm doing a lot of football right now. I was doing a lot of work at the college basketball tournament. I'm going to be working on a master's piece later today. We're taping Tuesday, April 6th. Be to your inbox shortly. I'm paying attention to the NFL, but I'm not coming out for the backup left tackle signings. You know, I'm not coming out for the punter signings. I need to have the impact moves made on the NFL calendar where I'm going to talk. And we get a great one. We knew the Jets were probably going to move on from Sam Darnold at some point, and they were shopping. Finally come to an agreement, trade him out of conference, which is what teams like to do when they're afraid somebody might haunt them. They trade him to your former team for life, the Carolina Panthers. Sixth-round pick goes to the Jets this year, a number two and a number four in 2022. I have not seen any of your takes, so I don't even know if we're going to line up on this. Just where do you come down on the big Sam Darnold trade of 2021?
Yeah, so I actually do think, despite the fact that Sam Darnold, he's a big name, right? But he's not been a good player at all. And there's a lot of statistical measurements that you can throw out there about how from any measure, he's not been a good quarterback. I still think this is an interesting trade because it obviously shows the Jets' hands straight out that they are going to take a quarterback at number two. Sounds like it's going to be Zach Wilson. That's interesting. I do think hitting the reset button for them is probably the right thing to do. Even if the new Jets brain trust, you know, Joe Douglas has been there with Sam Darnold for a couple of years, but the coaching staff, the offensive coordinator, one of the LaFleur guys, and obviously Robert Saleh is the head coach. Even if in their heart of hearts they believe Sam Darnold can be rehabilitated, it probably just makes sense to hit the refresh button. I also think it was kind of crazy that there was any thought that they could have a rookie and Sam Darnold in the building. Like, if you're Robert Saleh, the last thing you want to be doing is dealing with like a quarterback controversy in your first year. So I think it's the right move from the Jets' perspective, no matter what they get in a draft pick haul. And I think this is it's a decent, not great, but not terrible haul from them. On the Panthers side, Scott, I would love to go back and forth with you on this one because I'm having a tough time getting it. I'm having a tough time understanding the Panthers as a whole. And obviously, like you mentioned, I have kind of a tortured attachment to the team, but I don't really like the Bears are the poster child right now for team and organization with zero plan and zero direction, just kind of spinning their wheels. But, you know, the Panthers, even though they're less than two calendar years into the Matt Rhule experience, I still don't know what the hell the Panthers' plan are. You know, like it feels like they're kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks at the quarterback position in the second year post Cam Newton. I just don't really think. I think a couple of things. I think obviously there's more theoretical upside with Sam Darnold, but there's zero argument that he's been a better player than Teddy Bridgewater in the NFL. Like there's just no case to be made for that. It's weird that they soured on Bridgewater so quickly for being exactly who he's been his entire career. And I guess like if they want a guy that's going to take chances, Darnold again is theoretically that guy, but basically any analysis that we bring with what Sam Darnold could be for the Panthers or what they are hoping for him to be, it's all in theory because he's been a straight up bad NFL player so far.
This is where I become, I guess, a Sam Darnold apologist. I didn't intend to spend my life that way, but I guess I'm going to go down that path. He's always going to be younger than Joe Burrow. He's younger than Joe Burrow today. He's going to be younger than Joe Burrow in 2 or 3 months, which is not a knock on Burrow. It's just a sense to remind us that Darnold came into the NFL at age 21 and he's had injury issues. He's been surrounded by a horrible supporting cast and he's been tied to Adam Gase, who's going to go down legendarily as just one of the worst head coaches. And we've seen, and I know it's a cute trope right now, but all the guys who have left Adam Gase and seen their their fantasy and real life values spike, you know, their NFL fortunes prosper, Sam Darnold gets to start over. And I think with what Carolina, I don't think, like you said, I don't think it was a prohibitive haul. There are some people who were high-fiving Douglas the moment they made the trade. I don't think the Jets got a ridiculous package for Darnold, but I don't think it was like a bad package either. It felt like about what was right. But because Darnold's still just 24, because I like the offensive people in charge in Carolina, and I get it, maybe, you know, they did do some, it's odd that they brought in Teddy Bridgewater with a good sense of what he was, and now they seem disappointed that Teddy Bridgewater was who he was all along. I mean, you know, that's to be expected. It's not likely that Sam Darnold's going to have like a Ryan Tannehill career, or, you know, if you go back a few decades, it probably predates your birth. You know, Steve Young was horrible with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He lands in San Francisco with Joe Walsh with Bill Walsh and Jerry Rice. It'd be cool if Joe Walsh was on the Niners too. But
it would make him a much better band, maybe not a better football team, but at least definitely have some better guitar.
Joe Walsh was a lifetime contract with the Eagles, of course, so he never got to the 49ers. But I'm just excited to see. And you know, some people were pushing back. I like the move for both teams. The Jets are going to take probably Wilson, but certainly a quarterback. I agree with you. It doesn't make any sense to confuse the team and have. If you have multiple quarterbacks, there's a long NFL saying that if you have multiple quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks. I think the Jets need to draft their guy and go all in on him, probably going to be Zach Wilson, as you said. And what's the point of having Darnold around? So it made sense for the Jets to get the draft capital. I just want to see what Sam Darnold does when he doesn't have mono, when he's not around a team that can't play, doesn't have any skill talent, because that won't be a problem in Carolina. He's got McCaffrey. He's got DJ Moore. He obviously has experience with Robbie Anderson. They had a couple of connections in the Jets days. So I think Darnold has a chance to be interesting. And I like the people calling the plays there. I thought their offense was frisky at times last year. It wasn't consistent over the full season. But I think Darnold, I'm not willing to just say definitively Sam Darnold sucks and I'm done with him. I like to see what he could do now that he's getting a fresh start and he's way, you know, Adam Gase is completely in his rearview mirror.
Yeah, I think I'm theoretically excited about the player that Sam Darnold could be. The only thing, one point here about like the Adam Gase post-Adam Gase bump, which, by the way, is a real thing because Gase is like the stone worst play caller in the NFL. And obviously, that's not even his worst quality. I think dealing with people might be his worst quality, sure. which is a tough scene, right? He's about the worst thing that you'd want to have happen to a young quarterback who, like you said, has had a lot of weird things go his way in his career, you know, with the mono situation. He's had a bunch of injuries. It's been about as unlucky a start for Sam Darnold as you could possibly write up for a number two overall pick. But I will say the one thing with Tannehill, a couple of things that separate the Tannehill thing from the Darnold thing. One, Tannehill had like basically developed into an average starting quarterback before he started ripping up his ACL at every turn. And then things really went south for him in Miami. But from like a statistical perspective, he had several years with over a 90 passer rating, you know, and then passer rating's not everything. And obviously people are going to freak out about that. But like he had some legit decent seasons. Darnold has, again, never really even had he's had like a decent stretch his rookie year, but the last 2 years have been pretty poor. Tannehill is also, maybe not at this point in his career, but this is a guy who used to play wide receiver. You know, he was like a big, big time athlete. He was much more athletic as a scrambler, you know, making plays outside of structure, all of that. So even if he didn't have the instincts for it right away, Darnold has, you know, he's a plus mover. I remember some comparisons coming out of college to Tony Romo. Like that kind of makes sense. You know, a guy who can theoretically be physically gifted enough to improvise in the pocket. But not a guy that you're going to be running a lot of boot play action, that type of stuff that Tannehill's so good at in Tennessee. So I think Tannehill always had more upside from a physical perspective and had a more proven pedigree than Darnold does at this juncture of his career. If the Panthers, because let's be honest, like Sam Darnold was not their first option. I think their first option was Deshaun Watson. And for a lot of reasons, that's off the table at this point. I think if the Panthers had wanted to basically bring in Sam Darnold for the cost of a future second round pick and a couple other draft picks and let him compete with Teddy Bridgewater and let those two kind of go back and forth while not picking up his fifth year option, then fine. Like then I think that makes a lot of sense. But if they're going to trade Teddy Bridgewater or they're going to basically restructure him to essentially be, you are the backup and that is who you are. And Sam Darnold is just their guy for the next 2 years. I don't think that's a plan. I think that's basically like hoping that this thing comes together, which I just don't love for the organization.
Totally agree that I don't think this was their first shot. And probably not their second shot. They may have been interested in a Watson deal. And I think Carolina at one point was probably thinking that they were going to draft a quarterback. But the way things have unfolded, the Niners make that big trade. It sure seems like they're going to take a quarterback at number three. So you may have three quarterbacks go off the board, boom, boom, boom. And maybe a fourth one goes before Carolina even gets to the table. So this was, you know, the shot clock was running down. You have to do something. So maybe, you know, Darnold is a contested 15-footer. Let's talk about the collateral adjustments or collateral damage, if you want to be negative about it. DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Robbie Anderson. Do you like these guys more or less, about the same, if the quarterback change ends up going to Darnold? What are you doing with those guys?
Again, it's just tough because, like I said, I think right now what we know about these two guys, Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Darnold, I think Teddy Bridgewater is a better quarterback than Sam Darnold right now. But again, that's just based on the past. If we're projecting in the future, I do think, again, there's more theoretical upside with these guys. If Sam Darnold, I think there's almost a 0% chance. I would be stunned if Sam Darnold turns into a great starting quarterback. But if he's an average quarterback for the next 2 years, I do think that opens up the upside of some of these players. You know, DJ Moore was used as a vertical receiver last year in this offense, which I think is sort of weird for his skill set. I think he's better as a, but that might change with Curtis Samuel off the board. Like, I wonder, because they use Curtis Samuel so much as a gadget and like slot receiver. You know, they signed David Moore from the Seattle Seahawks, who has kind of been in that vertical receiver role. Like, he doesn't do what Curtis Samuel does at all. And obviously Curtis Samuel's a much better player than David Moore. And so with all these same guys, so I could see them actually flipping some of these roles around next year, because I think there's enough versatility with Anderson and Moore that you could play these guys at split end, flanker, slot, and move them around the field, which I think is good news for their fantasy stock. Robbie Anderson didn't necessarily sound like super hyped up to be playing with Sam Darnold. Like, he had an interview with Good Morning Football where he just was kind of like, yeah, I was really surprised. That was about as surprised as I possibly could have been. It wasn't sort of like, let me cape up for my guy Sam here. But they did have a pretty decent history together. They had some good moments. His touchdown percentage is much higher playing with Sam Darnold than it is with any of the other quarterbacks he's played with so far in his career. I don't think it moves the needle much for CMC. They're kind of right about there. And I don't know, Scott, I do like DJ Moore. I like Robbie Anderson. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey's a great player. They also added Dan Arnold. That's going to be fun to play. Fun to say Dan Arnold catching passes from Sam Darnold. That's going to be fun as a sleeper tight end there. But I think this skill position room with Samuel gone, the drop off from Anderson to Moore to the other Moore is pretty steep. Like, I think this, and the offensive line still has some questions. I think this is just it's much, 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 much better than anything Darnold played with the Jets. But I think this is just like an okay offense right now on paper, taking the quarterback out of it.
Now, as we spin this from a fantasy perspective for Darnold, obviously in the standard league, he's going to be somebody who's going to sit on the free agent wire, will have to play his way onto your roster. But as we see more people playing Superflex, obviously the DFS, for me, the best ball draft season for me starts right after the NFL draft. I'll start attacking best ball in part. We talked about this with Evan Silva a few weeks ago, just the greatest way to get the reps and get comfortable with what the player pool looks like. So I guess let's think best ball. Would Sam Darnold be kind of a frisky quarterback three in your best ball lineup? Or would you prefer somebody like Daniel Jones? I mean, can you sell me on an area where you might be clicking on Sam Darnold's name in a month from now?
Yeah, I think best ball is a great area to sort of default onto that, because it's like you could take him as that upside QB3 at the end of your draft. You know, you have to obviously make a compilation of quarterbacks for your room in best ball because you're not able to stream and play the waiver wire, obviously. So I think he makes sense in that format. And I do think I love the offensive infrastructure that the Panthers have, even if I'm entirely confused on what the hell their plan is. And like, why is David Tepper he seems to be very impatient and very impulsive as an owner. If I'm confused on that, I'm definitely not confused on the fact that I like their offense and I like Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator. I like the way they called plays last year. And it was very, very clear that Teddy Bridgewater was leaving a lot of meat on the bone. I don't know if Darnold's going to be the one to carve that meat off, but it was very clear that Teddy was leaving a lot on it. So I think there's some, you know, there's going to be some big weeks with Darnold. I think it's going to be an interesting ride there. So I'd take him in that format. But Daniel Jones, I don't love Daniel Jones. I don't know where you are with the Giants right now, but Daniel Jones is surrounded by a lot of talent. Like, you could talk yourself into, I'm not going to do it, but the general you could talk yourself into him being this year's Josh Allen because they make a nice move at wide receiver. The problem is one of these teams has Jason Garrett. So I think I'd prefer Daniel Jones just on the offensive skill position around him alone, but I'm not that excited about either one of these quarterbacks.
Well, I can't ignore the irony here that as you were talking about Darnold and Jones and their draft prospects, a garbage truck is moving through my neighborhood. So I think that's a way of saying maybe avoid these guys. But
yeah,
by the way, in best ball, I like to take three quarterbacks. I know a lot of it depends on how early you take the first one. There's a fragility point that maybe you should just take two and hope that they're healthy. But I usually find myself taking a frisky quarterback outside the top 20 for a third quarterback in best ball. I don't know if you have a preference to your roster construction. Of course, a lot of that is going to be determined in the middle of your draft when you see what type of players you have and what your expectations are from them. Do you, off the top of your head, seem like you have a preference two or three quarterbacks in best ball?
Yeah, I think there are plenty of ways to skin the cat in best ball. Shout out to cats. I'm sorry. I find that analogy to be sort of like a little gruesome. But I said it anyways, and I think the point stands that there's plenty of ways to do it in best ball. And like you said, I think it's important to stay flexible and not be like, I think where there's been enough research in the industry now that best ball has been pretty popular for the last, I don't know, you know, give or take 5-6 years, that there's not like one most optimal, like you got to do it this way, especially because there's so many platforms now with best ball. I think you can be really flexible, and it's important to sort of be open-minded with your roster construction. I do know for me personally, I'm not one to take the quarterback early, so I usually like to compile a room of three guys, you know, from round 9 to 13. It does get a little risky because at some point you could be staring at, like, quite literally a Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, Drew Locke, like, three-way quarterback situation, which I guess you could make work, but that does make me feel a little uncomfortable leaving a best ball draft if you push that can too far down the road.
It's funny you mentioned those three guys because they're all very similar in that I don't think anybody's sold on their talent, but yet they're all working with really interesting offensive pieces.
Yeah,
I've been dreaming of Denver landing a great quarterback, and then he gets to plop down in the middle of an unbelievable group of skill talent. Let's transition here. You mentioned in passing Josh Allen, and it gives us a great chance to talk about the Buffalo Bills. You've been working on some under-the-radar free agent signings, FA signings, the last few weeks and how they may affect fantasy football. And let's start with Emmanuel Sanders goes to Buffalo. Josh Brown is no longer with the team. Right now, I think the Bills are pretty frisky at plus 600 to win the AFC. There's some cracks in the Chiefs' infrastructure. I think Buffalo may end up being plus 400, plus 450, plus 500 when the season starts. You might want to get over to BetMGM and see if you can get that 600 now. I like this team. They kept their offensive coordinator. Obviously, Allen just had what would have been, you know, like a down-ballot MVP season. He didn't win it, of course, but I mean, he was on the short list of candidates. I'm at the point now where whatever the Bills are doing, I want to backline it. So I'm pro Sanders. How did you feel about that move?
Yeah, so Were you in on the Gabe Davis hype train there for probably which lasted maybe 48 hours on fantasy Twitter?
I've been a Davis fan. I mean, he obviously didn't get asked to run the reps that a lot of rookie receivers did, but I thought he was an explosive. It's funny. He ended up being last year a player I thought helped the Bills more than he helped out fantasy. Yep. You had to time the market on when he had the big games. I'm glad he's there. You know, Sanders, of course, you know, brings a lot more experience and I also got to give Buffalo credit. I know you've always loved Stephon Diggs and you sing just songs. You write sonnets about his route running.
It's true.
I was concerned about how quickly he could get acclimated in Buffalo. And him and Allen were peanut butter and jelly from like day one, it seemed like. I mean, I don't know what went on behind the scenes. I don't know how many reps they ran. I don't know how many Zoom calls they were on together. But they were Frazier and Monroe. They were Rice to Montana to Rice, you know, whatever you want to say, from day one. And when Sanders to me is kind of like a little bit of a poor man's Diggs in that he's a very reliable route runner. He's going to win in those tight spaces. He could be a great chain mover, a great third down guy. And Dable's the X factor here. I think Brian Dable's going to be a head coach very soon. I'm a little bit surprised that he didn't get more traction in the job market, but that's the Buffalo's advantage. I guarantee you, I want to leave you with this. I guarantee you I'm going to have an investment in the Buffalo Bills in one way or another this year. The Jets are rebuilding. The Patriots still at best look like a 9-8 or 10-7 team. And boy, is it going to take a while to get used to the 17-game schedule.
Shout out to you for nailing 9-8. That's good. You got it right now. I would have said 9-7 100% in that spot, Scott. So you've adjusted better than I did.
Well, I'm sure Jeff Fish is saying, like, well, you know, who's going to go 8.5, 8.5, man? You know, who's going to push my legacy forward? You need to see more ties, NFL. Maybe get rid of the overtime. Anyway, I like this move. Obviously, it does hurt Davis, as you said. I'm generally not somebody who pays up for a quarterback. I think I'm going to, for FOMO reasons, if nothing else, I'm going to have some Josh Allen somewhere. I don't want to be sitting out the Josh Allen experience in 2021.
Yeah. You know, most of the time that we see these offenses have these huge historic seasons or these big breakout moments like the Bills did last year, they start losing pieces from it. And obviously John Brown leaving it's a bummer, but they replace him with Sanders. And I love John Brown, but like I've also really been a fan of Manny Sanders for a long time for a lot of the same reasons as a separator. The fact that they have Brian Daboll in place does make me want to go totally all in once again. And I drafted a lot of Josh Allen, a lot of Stephon Diggs last year because of all those sonnets that I write about the route running. Shout out to Good Music there. But like this offense, I want to run it back with because they're running it back. That makes me excited that they kept the coaching staff together. And the point that I made in the article for the website about Emmanuel Sanders to the Bills is not that like I'm interested in drafting Emmanuel Sanders. I actually think there's a chance that he could be the fourth receiver behind Gabe Davis if Gabe Davis comes in and knocks their socks off in the offseason program, whatever the offseason program looks like this year. I do think it digs into the upside of Cole Beasley a little bit. I don't think it hurts Stephon Diggs at all. In fact, I actually think it could, in a weird way, be good news for all of these receivers because I think it shows us Buffalo's intent, which is they still want to be a pass-first, wide receiver-centric offense. Like, you don't go add a proven, really good vet like Emmanuel Sanders to be your third or fourth receiver unless you still want to run that type of system. I think the next domino from a fantasy angle that has to fall for the Bills is when and if they take a running back in the NFL draft. I would sort of be surprised if they took a running back in the first round. I know some of their beat writers are really, no pun intended, beating that drum that they should. But I kind of like that they didn't necessarily go out and, you know, invest in a Leonard Fournette, a Chris Carson, anything like that, like one of these big swing running backs, because they just doubled down on what they did really well last year, like because that identity helped them win.
I'm just excited. I am so ready for the Buffalo Bills season and whatever their win total is going to be early. I think I'm going to pound that and move it up by myself if I can. Let's shout out to Marvin Jones, who's just doing a tour of lesser NFL franchises. He spent a lot of time with the Bengals, as we know. Toiled in Detroit. This is a guy who found a way to score 4 touchdowns in a game with the Bengals, 4 touchdowns in a game with the Lions. I thought was always a little bit underrated. He had some trouble staying on the field here and there, but Marvin Jones, I think, has been underrated for most of his career, and now he hooks on with the Jaguars. So again, you know, that's his passport in the NFL. It's Bengals, it's Lions, it's Jaguars. But the Jaguars could be a fun team. You know, presumably they're going to have Lawrence is going to be their number one pick, and you think he would play right away. I thought their offense was a little bit frisky last year. I think the Jaguars are going to be a fun team this year, and I think Marvin Jones is going to have a piece of that. What say you?
I actually think they could be a really value offense next year, which is weird to say because it's the Jaguars, and we haven't been excited about this team from a fantasy perspective. We haven't been excited about this team, very often at all in their existence, but certainly from a fantasy lens, we haven't been excited about them since that 2015 burst with Allen Robinson and Blake Bortles literally winning fantasy leagues. But like this team, I think when you kind of look at them after adding Marvin Jones, and I agree with you, Marvin Jones, very underrated player. I think he's one of the best 50-50 ball receivers in the NFL, like the consummate cut from stone example of a number two receiver. So if DJ Chark is sort of able to take that next step, he had a really injury ruined 2020 campaign and obviously just playing in a chaotic environment in general. But if he's able to sort of be that fringe number one receiver, they got a great two in Jones. Laviska Shenault is really interesting as a potential big slot gadget hybrid receiver. You know, Urban Meyer has history with those guys like Curtis Samuel back at Ohio State. I think they could carve out a really fun role with him. Obviously, James Robinson we'll see if they draft another running back, but he is a guy that was really good last year. And I think their offensive line is just, it's not like one of the five worst in the NFL. And oh, by the way, they might be adding the best quarterback prospect to come in the league ever. You know, like Trevor Lawrence is at that level. This could potentially be a really frisky offense next year. And other than tight end is the one spot that I think that's a glaring hole for this team. But other than that, like, this offense doesn't have one spot where I'm like, they're in trouble right there. If you think the offensive line is decent, these three receivers are pretty good and Robinson's good in the backfield.
Yeah, I love the point you made about Chenault. And also remember, if you go back far enough, Urban Meyer and Percy Harvin made beautiful music at Florida with Tim Tebow throwing the football of all things. But, you know, Percy Harvin, there's probably some younger people listening to this pod or playing fantasy football who never got to see the good side of Harvin or don't even really know who he was. He was a really amazing, fun player at his peak. He was a blast at the University of Florida. And those early years with the Vikings were really, he was just like, you just always wanted to see him get his hands on the ball. And you knew any play where he touched it could potentially be a touchdown. I was a huge Percy Harvin fan. Unfortunately, he ran into a bunch of injury problems. He had the migraine issues for a while, never really popped in Seattle. But there was a moment where Percy Harvin was like on my top five list of skill players in the league.
I forgot that Percy Harvin had a 2-year stint with the Bills, too. In 2015 and 2016, that was like my first couple years like covering fantasy football and being like, I could talk myself into Percy Harvin one more time. Let me tell you what, it didn't work.
You know, the Jags didn't do much with their backfield free agency, but it looks like James Robinson, at least into the draft, still has that number one gig. And I don't know why they would attack. I would think after they take Lawrence, they're probably not going to go to an offensive skill player. Can we call James Robinson a winner in free agency just because there hasn't been, you know, Carlos Hyde is there. So what? I think Robinson is another guy. We like the offense. If the offense is pointing upward, if the arrow is moving upward on this team, wouldn't that stand to buoy the fantasy value of Robinson?
Yeah, I agree. You know, Carlos Hyde doesn't move the needle that much for me. I will say Carlos Hyde still kind of looked like a badass last year. A couple times he got the ball for Seattle. I was like, yeah, this guy still has it. This is his second stint of duty in Jacksonville because he left. Did he get cut or traded from the Browns? Nick Chubb's rookie year. And then, you know, Chubb just obviously went wild. I think that was one of those weird Hugh Jackson years in Cleveland, but he did go to Jacksonville that year. But at the same time, like, since then, Hyde has had a good year with the Texans. He was like the Seahawks backup, like I said last year. He still looks like he has it. I actually think that's a good enough addition for them to just sit on their hands and not take another running back in the NFL draft. Also, Carlos Hyde does have history with Urban Meyer at Ohio State. Sure. So there's some connective tissue there. I hope that that's the only move they make because that doesn't dissuade me enough from James Robinson, especially because I think he will be on like every fantasy regression list because of his undrafted free agent pedigree. And also because the one big, you know, one of the biggest positives from Robinson's rookie year was he was like the only Jaguars running back to carry the ball for a huge stretch of games from them. That's obviously not going to happen with Carlos Hyde in tow, but he's going to be splitting the backfield maybe 80-20, whereas he was just the 100% guy last year. But he's going to be splitting that 80-20 backfield of an offense that I think, as you and I are saying, we're much more excited with Trevor Lawrence in tow than, you know, freaking Gardner Minshew and Jake Luton and Mike Glennon. I mean, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, I can't believe that Mike Glennon actually was seeing starts last year. I still think Minshew could maybe morph into his generation's Ryan Fitzpatrick. You're just one of those guys.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to start with him. You don't want to marry him, but he's a great bullpen guy. If you need a spark for a second half, you need a spark for three or four games when your starter is hurt. I think a lot of teams would like him as a backup, or maybe even teams that are screwed a quarterback that could just try to knock some rocks together and hope they create a spark. So I'm interested in what Minshew becomes, but certainly there's not a lot of upside there. You know, the other quarterbacks you mentioned, you know, Glennon and Luton. You know, I never trust the quarterbacks who are as tall as those guys are. I know Lawrence is actually pretty tall too, although he's athletic. Huge. When we talk about free agent signings, I mean, of course, for fantasy, we're going to a lot of times focus on the skill guys, but we have to look at the full picture. And the offensive line is a huge part. Understanding offensive lines, I'm not saying you have to break down the blocking schemes and everything, but you need to know what's going on with the team's offensive line. And I know the Chargers got your attention. They made a couple of big splash moves. Corey Linsley, last seen in Green Bay, going to the Pro Bowl. He's now the Chargers center. They also added Matt Filer to solidify their guard spot. Nothing wrong with putting some big beef in front of your generational quarterback as they enter the year two. of that setup, new coach. I'm talking myself into the Chargers as some prop value, plus 550 to win the AFC West on BetMGM. Talk about what they did the offensive line and how you feel about this team in general.
Yeah, they sort of slipped under the radar because they made the Lindsley move especially. They made these moves quickly right out of the gate in free agency, and then they were just kind of quiet. And I love these two moves, especially Lindsley, because, you know, I think for Justin Herbert to take the next step in his development, like, he came out and was electric as a rookie, you know, throwing the ball, obviously doing a lot with his legs too. But I think if he's going to like take that next like pre-snap sort of evolution as a quarterback, having a great center is a perfect start for that, you know, because Lindsley can be great about call. Like, he'll take that some of that stuff off Herbert's shoulders in his second year. And I think that will stave off any sort of statistical regression for Herbert by letting the center, you know, and Lindsley's like one of the best centers in the NFL. So, you know, it's not as if they just added some goofball, right? This is a really, really quality addition. Love that. Also kind of leaves them to maybe take another offensive skill position player or two, and maybe round 1, 2, 3 of the draft. Cause you know, this is a very top heavy unit. They lost Hunter Henry in free agency, obviously XFL superhero Donald Parham and Jared Cook are holding down the tight end position right now, but Keenan Allen's still a stud. Austin Eckler, I think, like, listen, I was so excited to draft Austin Eckler last year. I'll be running that bad boy back one more time next year. Probably even more excited. I love that. Mike Williams, I think, is an underrated receiver. He's going to get hurt. We know that. But he's also a splashy guy. I could still see them, like, if they're just going to leave Brandon Staley the defensive side of the ball. And I think you could actually argue that, like, from a depth of talent perspective, obviously they don't have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, like literally two of the five best defensive players in the NFL. But there's a decent depth of talent here on the Chargers defense. Maybe they add more weapons around Herbert in the draft after solidifying this offensive line. It's really, like you said, it's really easy to talk yourself into the Chargers and get pretty excited.
And when I think, go back to the plus 550 that they are right now to win the division, Denver doesn't have a quarterback. I feel like I ping pong back and forth on the Raiders when they brought in Gruden. I thought it was a mistake. And then there was a point where I was ready to walk it all back. And the moment I was ready to apologize to Gruden, everything's gone rotary phone again with that team. And I'm like, no, I was right at the original time. This is like a 5-12. See, my ability to add up to 17.
You're so good 12, at that. You are literally blowing me away with how good you are at that. I'm going to be saying 5-11 until I'm 51 years old, basically.
Yeah, I think it's because I played so much blackjack, and I'm used to getting 17, which is a lousy hand in blackjack, is a negative EV hand in blackjack. So if you want to add up to 17.
You also do hockey, you know, baseball, like all these other sports that actually have, like, you know, obviously more games, number one, but different records. I'm just a dummy, like one sport brain guy. But on your point about Gruden, Scott, I've already figured this out. This is the perfect way to figure to talk about Gruden. I think he has come back and shown that he is a great offensive coach. I love the way he designs this offense. I love the way that he gets the most out of guys like damn Nelson Aguilar. And I love what they do with Darren Waller. I think this offense is very well called. I think this offense is very well designed. I think Gruden is a terrible in-game manager, and he is an awful personnel guy because he's way too impulsive. So I think that's basically that's the talking point with Gruden. So in one way, the middle ground was the right, it's easy to ping pong between so many things because he wears too many hats. You know, he's the play caller, offensive designer, head coach, general manager. I think Mike Mayock is set up to be his fall guy basically any day now. But the good news is they still have 7 more years of this experience left through the Raiders.
That's a very fair and I think important take. We can respect and have admiration for Gruden's work on the offensive side of the ball. And as you said, you know, Waller, who was always an interesting guy in Baltimore but never really got a chance to play, his life has had a lot of twists and turns to it. They turned him into a monster. He just got a good enough season from Aguilar that the Patriots gave him a huge contract. So Nelson Aguilar has nothing bad to say about John Gruden. He just got the man paid. So that's a key point. I will say this. Everything about the Kenyon Drake signing, just I recoil to that, and I'm not excited about Drake there. I know we've talked about Drake on previous pods. Just give me a you red light, green light, yellow light on Drake with the Raiders?
Oh, screaming red light. Also, I just for the first time in over a year saw my friend Marcus Grant recently, and for some reason the only football thing we talked about was how stupid it is for the Raiders to sign Kenyon Drake and then be like, he's going to be a receiver for us, when they just drafted Lynn Bowden to do that last year and traded him away in 5 seconds after picking him. And then he actually had a couple of decent stints doing exactly that for the Dolphins. So it like adds a layer of stupidity on what's already kind of a stupid signing.
Shout out to Marcus Grant, doing a great job with all things fantasy and all other stuff over at NFL.com, part of your posse. Man, you're just going to be a 30 for 30 done on you guys someday. It's going to be like that, the Packers coaching tree in the early 90s. It's going to show all you guys in your young 20s, and you've gone on to bigger and greater things and all that stuff. You guys will reunite 20 years later and tell stories in a steakhouse or something. Because we can't get enough offensive lineman signings on this podcast, talk about the Raiders. They had a problem last year. Marshall Yanda took his Hall of Fame career and retired, and they never really got guards solved. So they brought in Kevin Zeitler is, again, it's not maybe the buzziest fantasy signing, but there's a piece that Baltimore needed. They weren't able to get an impact wide receiver. Obviously, Sammy Watkins doesn't qualify there, but Zeitler at least is going to help this offense in 2021.
Sammy Watkins, though, has 100% come into Baltimore and immediately just started kissing the ring, like totally sucking up to Lamar, which, I mean, good. That's what you should do, right? Like he's coming and kiss that ring for sure. On the Zeitler signing, though, I loved this move. Again, it was very quick, like as free agency was starting, because Zeitler was actually released by the Giants. I think I'm getting that right. But anyways, he was a guy who this is his third team in the AFC North that he's played with. He obviously had started with the Bengals, went Browns, Bengals, blah, 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 and then to the Giants from there. But love this signing because it just solidifies, like you said, a problem area. I think the Baltimore Ravens offense, there was no shortage of things to complain about last year, and I don't think they've solved all those problems. I think Greg Roman will always sort of be a problematic figure there. I think they're just way too run heavy. That's why none of these receivers wanted to sign there. I think they could open things up a little bit more, but one of the things was an issue from the jump was the offensive line play. Obviously Yanda retires. I think this will help there. And also don't forget, they're getting back Ronnie Stanley. Like Ronnie Stanley was one of the best left tackles in the game, fresh off a massive contract extension. And then he goes down. So they're actually improving two spots of what was a really problematic area. That alone makes me a lot more excited about the Ravens offense than had they signed, I don't know, Juju Smith-Schuster or something like that. Obviously they need another receiver, like an actual good over the middle guy, someone like Juju actually would have been a really perfect fit in Baltimore. I would have really liked that signing, but I think this signing moves the needle for the offense more than had they added another receiver, basically.
And we know it's a loaded wide receiver class. And when we say that, I mean, we all talk about the guys who are going to go up front, all those Alabama receivers. Chase is back in our lives, and man, does he just look unbelievable. But there's going to be, we've seen it so many times the last few years, how many times a second round receiver, a third round receiver, a fourth round receiver has popped. The Giants got some value out of a fifth round receiver. If they want to fortify that position, they can do it in the draft, and they don't necessarily have to do it at the front of the draft.
I would love to see them add Rashad Bateman, Minnesota wide receiver who played a little bit of outside in 2000, played mostly X receiver outside in 2019, played a little bit of slot last year. I think they could have some positional versatility there. If Bateman is their big slot receiver, Sammy Watkins is their who cares decoy X, and they're using Marquise Brown in some more creative ways as their flanker, suddenly you're kind of cooking with gas there in Baltimore. It's just everybody's going to hate it for fantasy because at this point, it's just hard to imagine there's going to be enough volume for all of these guys to pop. Not that anyone cares if Watkins pops, but it is what it is.
Give me a quick answer on this before we transition. Like the Bills, the Ravens are plus 600 over at BetMGM to win the AFC. If I were to give you a free ticket on either one of those teams, Buffalo or Baltimore, which ticket would you take?
Oh, Buffalo. Just more okay. confident in the infrastructure right now, more confident in their offensive identity being something that sustains itself. Although I'm really rooting for Lamar to win, you know, to have a couple runs in the playoff. It's unbelievable. Like last year, there was all this discourse, Scott, about, oh, Lamar finally gets this playoff monkey off his back. It's like, this guy's been in the league for a second, you know, right. Give me a break. Like we used to kill Peyton Manning for not winning a Super Bowl like 10 years into his career or something like that. I know I'm revising history there, but that's not the point. He's got a long time. He's got a long time to win some more playoff games.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I mentioned Buffalo and I mentioned Baltimore on the AFC odds. And of course, the favorite, I think it was plus 190 the last I checked. The Chiefs are, of course, and look, last time we saw the Chiefs, they played in the Super Bowl. I think you remember it. And it was dominated by Tampa Bay. And Patrick Mahomes was running for his life the whole game. Nobody could block anybody. Mahomes played like the greatest game I've ever seen a quarterback play when his offense scored 9 points.
the greatest bad game of all time. Like literally.
The platform he was thrown to, you know. So what's happened? They've cut personnel on the offensive line. Obviously, they let Watkins go. He's with Baltimore now. I'm curious, you being the czar of all things wide receiver, I'm curious what your state of the Mecole Hardman address is right now, and maybe just the state of the Chiefs. Because even though they're on paper the favorite in the AFC, I see some cracks in this infrastructure here. Give me a rundown on how you see this team.
Yeah, I think you're right to point out some of the cracks here. Number one, the offensive line, they add Joe Tooney for sure. That's a good signing. I'm interested to see what Kyle Long brings. They bring him out of retirement. You know, maybe he plays guard. Maybe he plays tackle. I think there's a chance that either Eric Fisher or Mitchell Schwartz could be back. Schwartz might retire, though. That is something to watch. So there's a chance. And like, by the way, Fisher probably is not going to be ready for the start of the season. He tore his Achilles like right before the Super Bowl. So that's problematic there. I think they add offensive line help in the draft. And I also think they badly need to add receiver help. What do you make of the fact that, well, for one, Mecole Hardman, I'm in like total wait and see mode, and like basically anything that he gets from him, or basically anything we get from him, I think would be gravy at this point. He's not really stepped up when there's ample opportunity for him to step up. And I thought he was just like an okay, not great prospect coming out of school anyways. So I really just don't have any expectations there at this point. What are your thoughts about the fact that like they kind of got left at the altar by all of these, you know, receivers reportedly, right? Like Juju comes out and says he has an offer from the Chiefs. Who knows if that was like what kind of offer that was. But they weren't able to bring in any receivers despite seemingly being interested in that market. You know, and maybe T.Y. was another guy that was connected there as well. I do think they badly need to address this receiver room, though, because like it's Tyreek Hill and then a steep drop off after that. And even at tight end, it's Travis Kelce and a steep drop off after that. If one of those two guys was to ever get hurt, you're suddenly looking at like, you know, the DeMarcus Robinson experience again. And because he re-signed there, and we've seen that movie enough, I feel like.
Did I hear correctly that they put a second round tender on Byron Pringle? I mean, is that what it's come to for the Chiefs, that they need him to be a part of this team? Kelce into an age 32 season. You know, I talked myself into, before the Super Bowl, I talked myself into some of the Hardman props because I like the way they were manufacturing touches for him. It seemed to make sense to me because he's still so, at least from my eye, you would know more than I would because you analyze this stuff, but it sure seems like Hardman's still very raw as his downfield routes. And so let's find the easiest path to get him the ball. The jet sweep action, literally just throw him, hand him the ball or throw him that little pop pass where he's, you know, 2 feet in front of Mahomes. Then he can do what he does best, which is run. Remember, he came into college as a defensive back. He hasn't played receiver that long. He's still one of the fastest guys in the NFL. It doesn't seem fair that Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman are on the same team.
Yeah, right.
But I would have liked to see Juju would have been a great fit here.
Yep,
I would have liked to see somebody else added. Maybe they'll draft somebody. I don't know. But I just hope before the season starts, Patrick Mahomes is one of these guys that even if I don't get any Patrick Mahomes in fantasy, he's just the face of the league. He's the most fun player in the league for me. And I just want Patrick Mahomes to be great. I just want, if I watch an NFL Sunday and the games are kind of choppy and I see the Chiefs are playing that night, I'm like, oh, great. I get to spend 3 hours watching Patrick Mahomes, you know, be Steph Curry. Awesome. I can enjoy an offense. And I did not enjoy that offense in the Super Bowl. So I just hope they can have him. And look, nobody feels sorry for Patrick Mahomes when he's lived his entire career with Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. Who wouldn't want that type of infrastructure around you. But, you know, if the blocking isn't solidified, I just worry that Mahomes is going to be under duress. And while I would never want to openly root for or bet on an injury, I when I see the cracks in the Chiefs' interior, they're still really good. I can't bet them at +190. Again, it's pushing me to these Buffalo seasonal interests that I think I'm going to punch probably pretty soon.
Yeah, I love that. I agree that we could be sort of transitioning into the next phase of Mahomes' career where more is played. Like, he's always going to have a good leg up because he's got Andy Reid there. And obviously, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are top-end talents. But this team is sneaky shallow right now at this point around him.
No, this is not going to be a hard question to ask. I posted this to Twitter a couple days ago, and like 90% of Twitter nailed this right away. But I'm going to ask you anyway, Matt. Sports Illustrated Football Preview 2019. So this is less than 2 years ago. They had an NFL player on the cover, and the headline said, he'll carry your fantasy team, he'll fill up your feed, he'll destroy you in Fortnite. Blank is the perfect NFL star. I ask you, Matt Harmon, who was on the cover of SI, the perfect NFL star in 2019?
I mean, it's not fair because the answer is on the outline. But and Fortnite thing kind of gives it away too.
Yes,
plus, we've mentioned his name a few times. It is Juju Smith-Schuster.
So give me, Matt, back in 2019, I was talking about this guy could win a yardage title. He ends up going back to the Steelers. He may be the third best receiver on that team. It's just a 1 year deal. He'd like to make good and then maybe go somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe him and the Steelers will be back in love with each other in a year. I don't know. Just give us a state of what's happened to Juju. Cause I thought he was like somebody you took at the wheel 2 years ago in fantasy drafts. Now I don't know what to do with him. You've gone under the hood with him, you know, analyzing all the routes he runs. Just where are we with Juju these days?
Scott, this is how good of a memory I have about things that absolutely don't matter. You made me publicly apologize to Juju on this podcast in like three previous iterations of what this podcast has been, because I was so down on him going into his 2018 season that was obviously massive. So that's how look the cycle of how these things go, right? But my stance on Juju as an individual player has never changed, and it's that he has to be a big slot. You cannot run an offense through him because he doesn't separate versus press man coverage at any point. I think the Steelers have realized that. And to me, again, Juju has been the exact same guy for all 4 years of his career. The environment around him has just drastically changed. I think that when we talk about Antonio Brown being there and not being there, that's a huge difference. You just watching them play early in Juju's career, it's so many free releases from the slot, so many layup looks because Brown was there. There's not a lot of I would say that a lot of the sort of analysis around double coverage and extra defensive attention, most of it is noise and it's way overstated in my experience watching and charting receivers. It's not as much people don't just dictate three or two guys on every snap to one player. But there are players like Antonio Brown who are legitimately, he's one of the five best receivers to ever play pro football. At least you could argue that that's a coverage dictating guy. So I think that was a drastic difference for Juju. But I think the offense has just changed around him, and I don't think it's been for the better. This is a tough team to really get your head around going into 2021 because I love their three receiver set. Now that Juju is sort of viewed as just a really strong number two receiver, I actually think that's a good now the national sort of attention and his reputation has caught up to what I think he is as a player. I'm a big Deontay Johnson fan. I think Chase Claypool is really interesting. Their 1-2-3 of wide receivers is really appealing. But what does Ben Roethlisberger have left? Also, they don't seem to have a plan beyond Roethlisberger this year. One of their beat writers, I'm screwing his name up, but he writes for The Athletic, right? He wrote a piece basically showing that the Steelers are kind of setting up this is a clean house year and just they're not tanking. They're not doing a soft tank, right? You don't bring Ben Roethlisberger back to tank a year, but they're basically sort of writing off this year to be whatever they want. And then they can sort of start reimagining the team next year. They've basically put off the pain, or they're going to take the pain this year for whatever this team is, both from a reputation standpoint with Roethlisberger and just whatever it is, and just start actually building a new team next season. If you look at their moves, basically his point was that's kind of the way it looks on paper. I just from all that, I don't really know what to make of this team in fantasy, because despite the fact that I love their three receivers, their offensive line is worse. Roethlisberger was terrible last year and is another year older. They might take a running back in the first round of the NFL draft. It seems like a lot of people want to connect them to Najee Harris, but we'll see. I just think this offense is tough to look at, and I'd be surprised if Juju comes back to the team next year, just because it seemed like, you know, he got bigger offers elsewhere. Who knows if what that means? But I think he came back to the Steelers basically out of sort of convenience and like, hey, I didn't get a great offer anywhere else. Like, I at least know this team. I like my teammates. They like me. And let's just run this thing back and I don't have to move.
If the Chiefs had legitimate interest, if I were Juju, I would have signed for anything Kansas City offered for 1 year.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Live under the screen of Kelce and Tyreek Hill. You know, Hill's another guy that every team has to be paranoid of him the moment they come out of the tunnel, and then maybe attack next year. Let me ask you two quick fill-in-the-blank questions on the Steelers. You are not allowed to give analysis. I just want an answer.
Got it.
Does Pittsburgh make the playoffs in 2021? Yes or no?
No.
I lean no, too. Remember, the strength of this team is the defense, and we've seen Football Outsiders most notably, but a lot of sites have proven that football just doesn't have the continuity year over year. That's why you're so much better at building a stable offense. So I worry that there's going to be maybe just a little bit of natural gravity regression to that defense, and I really don't trust the offense. Okay, Matt, the Pittsburgh receiver you expect to have the most investment in next year is who?
Yeah, it's going to be Deontay Johnson. I think he's the best. I think he's the best player.
Gonna Sorry, agree
that was analysis.
With you.
I apologize.
How dare you add that deep level of analysis? I knew you couldn't help it. So you know you want to tell me about how you know how he runs the slot, how he runs with leverage from the slot, and how his hip turn is lead or whatever it is. The words of Matt Harmon are czar of the wide receiver. Please check out his work with Reception Perception. It is groundbreaking. I don't understand all of it, but I know it's really smart, and I'm glad he's on our team. If you like podcasts like the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast, we have a lot more of those over at Yahoo Sports. How about the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Wetzel Thamel and our old friend Pat Forty, that did a bang-up job with the NCAA tournament. Of course, 1,000 players in the NCAA transfer portal right now for hoops. Always a good time to talk college football. Always something going on fun with those guys. So check out that threesome and post it up with Chris Haynes for all your NBA needs. Check out that show as well. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, Yahoo Fantasy. That's the Yahoo Fantasy handle. I'm Scott_Pianowski, Matt_BYB. What does BYB stand for?
Backyard Banter. It was my original blog when I first popped up out of Lynchburg, Virginia, trying to make a scene, or trying to make it on the scene as a football writer. I was writing a Backyard Banter, and it's basically like having like an X's name tattooed on you. Like, you can't really get rid of it, but you're just kind of stuck with it.
So there you go. Matt still has the tattoo. No laser removal in his future. Liz Loza will be back later this week, continuing her excellent rookie snapshot series. You got to know these, you know, the days of just fading all the rookies is gone. These guys come in and they make impacts right away. She's going over wide receiver prospects, so you're going to want to check that out. Until then, for Matt, for our producer Brett, I am Scott. We'll talk to you soon.